While you were at this school, mm-hmm. did you ever meet the London children, the local
no.
children?
No, they, no. This school was strictly for the evacuees. Nobody else was involved.
But did you ever come up against the local children? Were there any no. local children?
No, I don't remember. I did meet local boys, but not through that, you know.
Were there many children about in London in the summer of 1914?
I don't think so, no, because as I say, we was not involved with them at all. See, we was, for the first year or so, I must say, at least, we were more or less confined to our own little community at the hotel, you know. There was, in Kensington High Street, apart from the Royal Palace, there were other hotels that had been commandeered for evacuee centres, and all along towards Fulham, and all around that area, there was different places where I couldn't tell you all the names of them, but there was quite a few. The biggest part of the population of Gibraltar came to London, you know, let's face it that way, and they must have took over a lot of places. And of course, eventually, we got to find out, oh, there's a so and so hotel in such and such a street. Where there's some other evacuees, and of course you went along to find out if anybody that you knew and so on, you see. But for the first year, I think that was just limited to that. So our contact with the rest of the people, you know, the population of London was very, very little. And as I say, regards to schooling was strictly for people taken or evacuees, nobody else.
Had you any idea that a lot of London children had been themselves evacuated out of London?
Well, I don't think we did at first, but of course eventually we saw pictures and, you know, in magazines and that, I suppose, and we realised that they had been evacuated as well, and yes, we did find out that they had been evacuated, yeah.
Did it not seem strange to you that you had been sent to the city where
well,
the
it didn't
young
then.
Population...
Well, it didn't probably then to me, because I say again, you've got to take into account my age at the time. But I think to the older people, yes, the message did come on all right, you know, especially when the Blitz started and we was right in the middle of it.
Was any attempt made, you know, to get you moved from
no,
London?
None.
By the Gibraltarians?
No, none. Well, you see, I think once we were over here, our people, as you got, other than the committee to supervise our welfare, they had no jurisdiction as regards to where we went or where we were taken or nothing like that. I think that rested entirely with the government, I think. Nothing to do with our evacuation committee.
Would you say that the Gibraltarians, so far as you know, were quite happy to be in London?
Well, they were, not, we'll say they use the word happy, but they just resigned to the fact that they had to be here and they had nothing they could do about it, you know, to be moved to anywhere else. I mean, it wasn't in their power to do anything about it. So it's a question of having to resign yourself to the fact.
Well, did you not have a spokesman who could sort of approach ministers on your behalf?
No.
Were you not organised?
No, not to that point, no. I thought, as I say, we had a committee, but their function was solely to, for each evacuation centre to see that you were, you know, your food and the welfare of the place in general was adequate, you know, nothing else. They didn't have powers to change any of what if they decided to move us from say from London to Glasgow again, nothing we could have done but gone, like, you know. We had no choice.
Do you know if there was anyone in the British government who was sort of keeping an eye on your welfare?
Well, no, I wouldn't like to say, because I don't think or know of anyone that did, no. There might have been, I'm not saying that there wasn't, you know. Obviously somebody must have been responsible for us, but not that I know of, no.
Going back to the hotels, were all the facilities open
to you? No. They were strictly evacuee centres. Well, the word hotel, only as it applied to the name of the place, but they were strictly evacuee centres. Nothing to do with the hotel. The amenities of the hotel didn't exist.
So, what happened to these sort of facilities?
I suppose these hotels were taken over by the government and used as evacuee centres, and I suppose the proprietors took all their trimmings away and all that sort of thing, but the kitchens and so forth were still being used, of course. But all our food was catered for by John Lyons, by the way. They weren't cooked at the... They were brought by John Lyons to us, and we went down to the dining hall and for dinner or for breakfast and that sort of thing. But again, as I say, the dining hall had been converted into like a, well, a dining hall as such, but not with tables and, you know, four and that sort of thing, you know, long tables and, you know, fold-up tables and that sort of thing, you know, wartime sort of thing. Like, you know.
So these hotels were really converted, were they?
Yeah, evacuation centres, they were eventually called, I think you find, that that was a proper term that they used. The word hotel only comes into actually citing the place, locating the actual place that it was. As I say, the one we was at Royal Palace is now the Garden Hotel, I think it's called now, because it's been demolished and rebuilt. It was a seven-storey hotel at the time. Quite posh at one time, I think, by some of the fittings inside. That the word hotel finished just as far as the name went.
Were there any facilities for, say, social activities in the evening?
Well, not as such, no. You just made your own. There was eventually, later on in the evacuation, you know, there was things organised like concerts and, of course, being Catholic, religious services were well organised, like mass and all that sort of thing. But eventually, I think we had concerts and all that arranged. But certain little things came up, you know, that they started organising some sort of entertainment and that, but not a great deal. We all made our own.
But would there have been a lounge for you to sit in?
Oh yes, there were lounges and all. Those are still there, if you get what I mean. You could still go down to the lounge and sit, but of course you must realise that the word lounge, again, only as far as applied to describe the actual room, but when you got a load of families, I mean, a seven-storey hotel there, full of families with children and all sorts, aged aunts or aged mothers and all that sort of thing, and you know, you just didn't go down to the lounge. Some people did to sit down and all that thing, but you got to realise children running all over the place, and so the lounge only in word only.
So you tended to stick to your rooms, did you?
Mainly, yes. And sort of go out, like, you know, say in the park or something like that.
How did your mother settle to this life?
Well, like me, she seemed to have adapted herself to it a bit better than somebody else might have done. You know, say she started helping in the sick bay, and eventually took up a job in St Mary Abbott Hospital at Marlowe's Road there, and I think she sort of took to a bit more or better than some others.
Were there many people needing the sick bay when you came?
I think the older people, yes, especially as the winter came on. I think the it was only a sick bay, and I say only, you know, case of under hospital and that sort of thing. It was only a sort of for the usual, you know, cuts and graces and that sort of thing, you know.
Do you think you felt the cold that first winter a lot? That you brought in, generally?
I think in general, yes, they would have done, yes.
It was a very severe winter, wasn't it?
I can't recall, you know, that, as I say, again, you know, we'd never seen snow or ice or anything like that, so this is all new, and the bitter cold would have been twice as bitter to us and would have been to the local people, you see.
Was the hotel adequately heated?
Again, yes, you know, at first, most of the original heating was on, but of course later on we had to economise and that sort of thing, and some of the heating was cut down a bit. But there was heat, yes.
You mentioned earlier on that you still continued going to church.
Oh yes.
Where would that have been?
In one of the lounges. Well, at first, of course, we always had a service in the hotel of a Sunday by one of the local, you know, one of the priests came out from Gibraltar. But eventually we did find churches in the area that we could go to, Catholic churches, and we used to go to one in, I think it was in Church Street, I think. There was one that was badly bombed, the bottom of Kensington Road, Kensington High Street. But eventually we found churches to go to and, you know, carry on our, you know, religion for the people that wanted to, you know.
And how about the congregations of these churches? Did they go out of their way to sort of welcome you, or were they friendly?
Yeah, I think that, you know, it probably helped to make the people feel more at home. So I think, you know, I think they would have done, you know, they're, from my own experiences, that they would have gone out of their way to, you know, be nice and help you, particularly on the religious side, you know.
You mentioned how you and your mother settled down mm-hmm. to life in England. Would you say that you integrated better than certain other Gibraltarians? You know, did you have the impression?
I think the younger people seem to integrate. You know, it's only a personal opinion again, of course. Quite more easily than the older people. And I think they eventually, by the time they went back, they were quite happy, really, quite integrated, I think, in a lot of the ways and that here. But I say not the older people, I don't think they ever integrated. I think they never changed, you know. Especially those that were, say, of Spanish stock, that had never been out of Gibraltar, I think they, to the day they went back, they never changed. And they couldn't accept this. But that's the way they were, I suppose.
Do you think any of them sort of were disappointed with Britain?
Well, I should imagine the older people would have been, yes, as I say, because of the entirely different environment of what they'd been brought up to, you know. Yes, I think they would have been, yes.
You think perhaps they expected something different to what they found?
Oh, I don't think they would have, they were expected to find anything that they would easily, so to say, acclimatise to. I think they were coming to a proper strange land, if you like to use the term, right? And they would have found it very, very impossible to sort of acclimatise themselves to this sort of way of life, like, you know. But again, I'm talking about the older generation, not so much the younger. The boys and the younger boys, I think they, once they've been here about a year or so, they started getting into the swing of things, like.
Do you think the sort of scale of things was important?
Oh, yes, definitely. Because as I say, as I described earlier on, the, you know, size of the streets and the houses and all that sort of thing was, well, it made a terrific impact on me, and I'm sure it must have done on others as well, not just me. Well, in 1937, the Scouts came to England and stayed with the Scouts in London, and I wanted to come then, but of course couldn't afford to come, so coming in 1940 made the change really was something that I wanted to do.